If you love the Black Married and Debt-Free podcast, if you get any joy, if we've ever done anything for you, do us a huge favor and go and give us a 5-star review on this podcast. Leave us a comment if you like, but that helps our viewership ranking. Peace.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's going on, everybody? This is Marcus, and I'm here with my lovely wife,
Shira.
And as you can see, I mean, y'all know I like to smile, but I'm really smiling today because we have some special guests in the building, friends of the podcast. They've been on before. We've had the privilege of being on their awesome platform, but I'm super excited to have Julian and Kirsten from Rich and Regular on the podcast, and they're really going to be dropping something special because they've written a book. Yes. And we're super excited because we got a little sneak peek of the book, and we're going to be digging in and asking some questions. So Julian and Kirsten, how are you both doing?
What's good up? Thank you for having us. It's always good to reconnect with y'all.
Yeah, next time we got to get y'all out to Atlanta. Last time we saw y'all, we had the privilege of hanging out with y'all out in Oakland.
Yeah.
And so hopefully we can get y'all out to the East Coast, you know?
Oh, man. Yeah, yes. We got to do that. We got to do that.
So the last time we connected, it was for an episode of Money on the Table.
Yeah.
And for us, you know, it was amazing. And it was great watching you two, like, in your production bag and coordinating and bringing together, you know, people to talk about. We talked about tech. It was just a great and robust conversation. And for us, it was just awesome seeing you in person. It was like, oh my gosh, there they are. You know, so it was wonderful. We had a blast.
Yeah. We felt the same way, man. Yeah. I remember seeing you guys across the street and I was like, that's them. But I think that's also part of the, you know, I guess the magic that we're really trying to create with that show. And quite honestly, why we were, you know, really fortunate and wanted to connect with you guys because you're real people. And I think that, you know, more people need to see that, right? That there are more people, real people with families, with challenges that aren't perfect, that are still out here making things happen. And I think more than anything, that is what really cuts through and helps other people like really want to reconsider their own lives and take action. So now we had a great time, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It was definitely a vibe. So before we really dig into the book, I just want to ask you all, how long, you know, have you been in this process? How long? Because when you're creating something, you know, it's almost like you're having a baby, right? It's like, how long did it take you to really nurture and get this book done?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I definitely understand why authors call them book babies now, because the process, like the very beginning of the process, which was for us finding an agent, started in fall of 2019.
Wow.
And then we spent 6 months working on a book proposal, went through, I think, 12 rounds of a book proposal, trying to figure out like what we wanted our name to be attached to, what we wanted to be known for. And then we signed our book deal right in March of 2020, a couple of weeks before the World Health Organization declared it a global pandemic. And so everything changed after that. We had a plan for the book, and the book was always going to be tailored towards Black professionals, but it was going to be the tone of it was a little different.
Yeah.
And then everything happened. George Floyd happened, the pandemic happened, remote work happened. And so it allowed us to really say our message with our chest. And so allowing room for all of that change and transition to happen. Long story short, it took us about 2.5 years.
Exactly. We really did feel that labor of love.
Yeah.
And just reading the book, I felt like you were talking to me. And I feel that this is the book that the Black community needs, you know, right now. Yeah. And so I'm just excited to dive into it a little bit more today. But one of the questions that I wanted to ask, and I have an idea of what the answer might be, but what is it that readers will take away from the book that they won't be able to get from like reading your blog?
And shout out to their blog, award-winning blog, y'all, if y'all are not familiar with it. But yes, go ahead.
Yeah, so there's a lot that I think you'll get from the book. I think one of the benefits of writing a book is it's one of the few times that I think people get to truly organize their thoughts, especially if you're going the traditional route. You get to organize your thoughts. You get to be much more prescriptive. You get to be a lot more specific. And you don't really get that in a blog. A blog is a much more casual, at least for us, a much more casual and dare I say even creative form of expression. A book is similar, but it's much more structured. It's much more organized. We answer questions. We provide solutions. Those aren't really things that we've done in the past on our blog. And we've done that for a reason, because we didn't want to. Well, first of all, we don't really believe that instruction is actually going to be the key to getting people to take action. And I know that's a little controversial, but it's something that we realize in having thousands of conversations with people about money, literally around the world, both in person and online. You start to realize more often than not, people have the answer. They know where to find the answer. That's not the problem, right? They're struggling with some of those other issues. It could be a cultural challenge or sort of a social norm that they're struggling to overcome, a combination of both, whether you want to call it fear. It doesn't matter. Those more emotional issues are really what we think a lot of people that we're talking to in the book kind of struggle with. And so to your point, Shira, that's why we wrote it in a way. I mean, sometimes it felt like a love letter. Sometimes it felt like a kick in the butt, you know, but it was like it's a heavy dose of love. And we did that on purpose because we knew that we needed to do that in order to help people really, really feel stirred up inside. So,
And I definitely feel that was accomplished, because sometimes like you can read a financial, you know, education book, you know, and like feel bad, you know, about yourself, but in reading your book, I felt empowered.
Right.
I didn't feel judged. Right. You know, I felt like, okay, this is a framework for which I can be in the driver's seat to start to make good financial choices without going, okay, step one, step two, step three. But it was like a beautiful framework that was presented that I believe that readers will appreciate.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That was really important to me, because I am somebody who will dive into books and take on the voice and the rules of the author. And in the personal finance space, that was really limiting for me because a lot of it didn't apply to my life. And so it was important that we created enough structure so people didn't feel like they didn't know, couldn't grab onto one thing and start, but also gave you rituals and reminders of things that you actually need to check in with yourself. I want the loudest voice in your head to be your own.
Yeah.
Black people do not need another guru, another teacher, another person telling them what to do. We know what to do. We just need to like clear out all the fluff and the noise and like get recentered. And I think that's what we were trying to accomplish, which is very hard because publishers insist that people want to be told what to do. Right. And it's like, when you're already marginalized, that's not what you want. That's what you're used to, but that's not actually what you want. And certainly not what you need.
Yeah. I think that's very well put. I was telling Shira, I said, if I got the vibe, like when I first read, and I hate to insert this author, but when I first read Rich Dad Poor Dad, where it wasn't
I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah, it wasn't a strategy per se. There was some strategy, but it was more mindset and open you up. It's like, man, I never, you know, so I got that. And I feel like the Black community and any other community that reads this mm-hmm. will get that vibe when they read this. Like a lot of things that I never thought about that, you know, it's yeah. a lot of light bulb moments in the book. So speaking of one, and you guys have kind of been on the front line of this, the FIRE movement, financially independent, retire early. Can you kind of speak to how and why that is important for communities like ours, and why that's kind of been something you both have been on the forefront for?
So I found the movement first, then I shared it with Kirsten. And, you know, it took her a while to kind of wrap her head around it, but eventually she did. And then we both sort of stopped being outsiders and really decided to step in and really kind of make it a central part of our life. But a lot of it goes back to what Kirsten was saying before in terms of the moment that we're in. And a lot of these things were happening when we found a movement back in 2012, 2013. Mm-hmm. Society really just hadn't caught up to start giving it a name like the social reckoning, or we really weren't forced to pay attention because we didn't have a pandemic that we were dealing with at the time. But we were in the very early stages of our corporate careers. And so as we were thinking about this movement, and in general, it's a powerful movement that I think is relevant for everyone, especially working professionals of all backgrounds. It doesn't matter. This is a movement that I think you should at least acknowledge is relevant and something that might be applicable for your life. But when you think about it in the context of the Black community, and you think about the racial wealth gap, and you think about the racial income gap, you think about the struggles that so many Black professionals have in the workplace, and you combine all of those things, I think you really have to come to a decision to say, okay, I need to think about my, like most of us think about our careers like it's a game, right? And it's a game that we believe that we can win, and we're going to win because we're going to work harder, and we're going to be smarter, and we're going to get more credentials, and we're going to do all of these things, and we're going to win. But the reality is a very small percentage of people actually win, and we define winning in very narrow terms. It's either getting the job, getting the next job, and it doesn't ever stop, and I'm getting the promotion. What we're really trying to introduce to people, all people, but specifically the Black community, is that winning can look like being at a financial position where you can afford to walk away, where you can essentially cash out and live life on your own terms. And that doesn't mean leave your job. It could mean leave your job,
right?
But you at least have put yourself in a position where that's an option for you. And most people don't have that. We are very comfortable with the imbalance of power between employee and employer, right? So we give them the right to fire us whenever they want,
at any point,
with no cause, with no real reason, for justifiable reasons even, because the company is hit on hard times. And more often than not, that leaves a lot of us in a really precarious situation. So when we think about the Black community, and we think about the opportunity that we have with the most educated and a hardworking generation, what we don't want is to squander this moment or to squander this opportunity. Okay. So we wanted to give some instruction and an opportunity for us to say, all right, we're great and we're making great money, but it may not last forever. Mm-hmm. We may not have 30 years to figure this out. So let's shorten that timeline for the betterment of ourselves, but also the improvement of our community.
That's dope. I love that. I love that. And I definitely got that, you know, from y'all's book. So wonderful. Now there was a quote that I really liked. It says, freedom cannot be achieved without letting go. What are some of the things that, you know, people might have to let go of? I know you kind of touched on them there, but what are some of the things when you say a quote like that, you know, what are some of the things you want people to think about when you say that?
It's a lot of the advice that you've been given by the adults in your life and the people that you love and look up to. Mm-hmm. I think to Julian's point, we're just at a time where traditional advice isn't going to serve you. Mm-hmm. And so things like, you know, you got to work twice as hard for half as much, or this idea that work ethic is more virtuous than freedom, or this idea that, you know, just put your head down and take it. You should be grateful for the things that you get, even though the data suggests that we're underpaid and under-mentored and, you know, all these things that we're just supposed to be grateful and just supposed to be happy to be here. You have to let that go. And if you do have a prestigious career, if you do have a career that comes with some status in certain communities, being a doctor or a lawyer, you know, means something to your mom, to your grandma, to everybody. You have to let go of the idea that your job is somehow your identity or that your personality is attached to this thing that you do for a living. Right. And I think that's the hardest part for a lot of people, because it can feel like a sunk cost. It can feel like I've spent all of these years getting credentialed. I've paid hundreds of thousands of dollars on advanced education. My social network, my lifestyle, my friend groups are all built off of this like connecting thread of my career. Right. And so you got somebody like me saying, nah, that's actually the least interesting thing about you. You'd be totally fine if you never talked about law or medicine again. Like you'd meet a whole different set of people and start to figure out like, you know, what makes you special as a person who's not exchanging their time for labor. And that idea is just really scary for a lot of people, because, you know, so much is built on top of it.
Yeah.
Right. And another quote, look, I'm paraphrasing at this point, but at one point in the book, it said that like your title, your job title will not be on your tombstone. Mm. And so really with this book, it's like finding what matters to you. And then what steps, you know, do you need to take in order to get there? So thank you for that.
Yeah. And
I'm sorry. There's one thing I did want to say. It's like, we all work with someone, and I know I do. And it's like, their job is all they have. Right.
Yes.
And I think this really, what you were saying, Kirsten, really speaks to that. It's just like, we're more than that. We're more than that. And, you know, sometimes you see those people and you're just like, Lord, get another passion, right? Get something.
Yeah, I get it.
And I want to be clear, like, we've both been there.
Oh, right? Yeah.
So we've been there. We've had the fortune of going through some of the hard conversations personally and with one another to come to the conclusion that we've come to. And again, we just so happen to have been willing to have that conversation with so many people over the years, both within our circle and outside of it. And that's when we really started to realize that this is a pervasive, this is cultural. This is part of American culture. It's part of Black culture. And so to your point, like, you have to be willing to let some of those things go. Very similar to like parenting. Like, we don't do all of the things that our parents' generation did, right? We take some of the things, or like you said, I think it was in the Money on the Table episode, you eat the meat and you spit out the bones, right? We have to be willing to do that in more areas of our lives, in terms of our professional identities, in terms of our careers, in terms of how we think we can earn money, even though we may not necessarily know how to do it today. Doesn't mean you won't be able to thrive at that thing a year from now. And so this is the moment that we're in, not just from a social justice standpoint, but from an entrepreneurial and entrepreneurial standpoint. A lot of people really have an opportunity to lift themselves up and redefine who they are in a lot of ways. And we're hoping that our book can help get them over the hump.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And so along those same lines, one of the chapters talked about the purpose of income. And I really enjoyed that chapter. And you laid out four distinct purposes for income, one being security, flexibility, independence, and freedom. So can you talk a little bit more about that idea of having purpose for income? And you don't have to tell it all, because of course we want folks to get the book.
I need to get the book. Read it. Yeah.
I'm going to stop halfway through. It's like, if you want to learn the other two, get the book.
Right.
I think the purpose of income was really just our attempt to tell people what it's like to live in a consumerist country, right? Consumerism is a huge part of the American economy. Even through investing in the stock market, 70% of the stocks in an S&P 500 index fund are related to consumer spending in some way. And so the idea behind the purpose of income is pretty simple. If you don't give your income a purpose, somebody else will. And there are so many systems that are dedicated to doing this in a really stealth way. We talk about watching NBA basketball or NCAA basketball, since it's going on right now. But if you look on the court, there are hundreds of ad placements. They're on the floor. Yeah. They're on the backboard. They're on the shot clock. Trying to remember all the parts. I know. They on the rim. But it's everywhere. Your phone, it's everywhere. And it's to the point now where you don't know why it's in your timeline or in your feed. You don't know if it's something that you clicked on or if Alexa just overheard you talking. Right. And so you are like inundated with marketing messages and advertising. And so if you don't have a very clear purpose for your income, it's just going to go to the advertisers who are in your ear. And so this is really just a reminder for people to say that the purpose of your income is to buy your freedom. It's, you need to get money, know that your money can work way harder than you can, put it to work. And as you move through the purposes, you're kind of shifting from earning your money to managing your money to your money then working for you. And that's the goal, is that you stop working and you have this financial plan that supports the laziest version of you. Whether you ever decide to be lazy is up to you, but like, you have a system that allows you to take a break when you need one. Yeah. Shout out to the Nat Ministry. Right. Encouraging everybody to take breaks.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that. And so one thing also that I really wanted to get into was the 15-year career. Like, to me, that's where I got excited, because so many people think, man, I mean, I've been working since I was 15 and a half. And I know there were years there when I thought, I'm going to have to do this till 65. That's just what my, what my granddaddy did. My mom and dad did it. But when you talk about the 15-year career, can you kind of get into some of that for those who are really excited to get into this book?
Yeah. So, you know, the idea started to really kind of build over the years, but I think there was a particular moment that really sparked it for us. It was because someone asked us, well, how long should a career be? And it was actually a reporter. I won't name the publication, but we basically scheduled a time where she wanted us to contribute to an article. She actually missed that appointment, but she was texting us and calling us frantically because her mom had literally fallen that day, and she was rushing to the hospital, trying to both care for her mom and get in this interview really quickly. And it was really sad, obviously, because of what happened. But all of that really just got us thinking. It was like, wow, why don't you just take this, cancel the interview? Like, don't worry about us. We will make ourselves available. But we understood that she didn't see it that way. And so finally, when we spoke, you know, we were talking about that a little bit. We were actually interviewing her a little bit to learn a little bit more about why she didn't just kind of let it go. And then we naturally went into this conversation around careers. And we were talking about how we'd manage our careers and some of the other people that we've met throughout our financial independence journey who had managed their careers. And when we started to think about it, it was like very few people actually have a hard and fast number. We just walk into our careers thinking that we're going to be here for as long as they'll have me.
As long as
I am able. But very rarely do we actually think, well, what if you began with an end in mind? Like, how would you manage your money differently? How would you manage your relationships and all of those things differently? And so as we started to think about how long our corporate careers were, I'm like, I've been working and hustling since I was 15 and admittedly tired, right? Like when I was like, all right, if I'm tired now, I know I'm going to be real tired 10 years from now. And then we landed on 15. That felt about right. And we broke it down in terms of like, this is what you do with your money. This is how you manage your money. This is also how you manage your career in terms of opportunities during that first 5 years. And hopefully if you can get out of that first 5 years, continuing to live low, 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 as far below, yet comfortably below your means as you can, then you can come out and go into that second 5 year period, years 6 through 10. And now it's about developing different skill sets, knowing what you're good at. Hopefully you've tried a couple of different things. Maybe you're applying for another job. Maybe you're, you know, exploring other departments, whatever it is, but you really want to help identify where your superpower is and what's the thing that makes you uniquely special that allows you to, one, optimize your income, both in that job, but also identify something that you might be able to build on outside of that job. And then that last sort of 10 years, assuming you've paid off all of your debt, you've been investing along the way. Now we're talking about years 11 through 15, where it's really about test and learn. You should be crushing it in your job at this point. You should be able to do it, you know, in your sleep. And now it's like, all right, with this extra time, I'm going to start looking outside and really putting these new skills out there into the marketplace and seeing what I can do to gain some supplemental income. And what we found, one, that worked for us, but two, for a couple of other people, it worked so well that they were actually able to walk away from their careers. They were able to cash out before they even hit the 15th year. And so, and you guys know this, you're, you know, investors in real estate, like, it's always feels good to have those happy surprises. It could be that, hey, rent is growing. It could be that market appreciation is going. And you realize that while you were banking on, let's say, $1,000, I'm just making it a rent collected at a particular property, now it's upwards of 1200, 1300, 1500, right? So you get those welcome surprises. And I think even outside of real estate, there are people who invested in the stock market. And certainly if you've invested over the last 10 years, we've not experienced average historical return.
Nowhere close.
Right? We've had years where it's 3 to 4, in some cases 5x, depending on what your investment portfolio looks like. And so you at least want to put yourself in a situation where that's an where that's a possibility for you. And that's really what the 15-year career is about. It's about, this is how you design your career. This is how you manage your time, so that at the end of that 15th year, you have some options. You have a little bit more power. You can decide to hang on and just collect a steady paycheck, and your life is easy from there. Or you at least have put yourself in a position where you're empowered and able to walk away.
Yeah, man, I love that. And I like being able to read that section and see myself, like, where I would fall in that timeline. Yeah. And then also evaluate or reevaluate, you know, okay, what am I not tapping into? Right. And then also to feel good, like, okay, this is where, you know, I am, and I'm not too far off. Right. So I think that was great. And another thing that you all talked about was, you know, obviously creating streams of income outside of your 9-to-5 job, but you also provided readers with reassurance that they didn't have to be an entrepreneur to achieve FIRE. And so I really did appreciate that. But in considering your journey, there was a time when you took a leap from being, you know, a 9-to-5 employee to being a full-time entrepreneur. So can you take us, you know, into a little bit of that journey and the courage? You all talk about the courage too, that it really took to make that leap.
Yeah, Julian leapt first. Mm-hmm. So I think what allowed us to do this was we had always, for the majority of our relationship, lived off of one income. And so we had the flexibility in case someone, you know, lost their job or needed to leave, that we would still be okay. And so when Julian left in 2018, we were living off of my income for about 18 months before I joined him, while he was building the business. And so that timeline is really important for people to make sure that you have enough of a runway where you're bringing in cash from something else, as well as kind of building your business, or you have a cash reserve set aside. But yeah, when I left, it was a matter of doing the math and asking the questions about what my job was teaching me to be, who my job was teaching me to become. I had reached what I felt like was the end of my 15-year career. You know, again, the other benefit of that framework is not looking at your career as this lifelong pursuit. It's deciding, like, after 15 years, very similar to 12 years of schooling or 4 years of college or 6 years of med school, whatever it is, that you're done. And so I felt like I had reached what corporate America could teach me at this point. And so the idea was to join the business and see what I could learn in this capacity. And it's been great. It's been challenging. It has challenged me more so than my job did in the last 5 to 7 years. But at the end of the day, it's equipping me with skills that will be more valuable as we go into this new economy. So if I ever decide to go back to work, which is an option that's available to me, I'm well poised to do well in the new economy of future of work.
Yeah, my departure was a little different, right? And it involved, you know, you could argue some of the failures of diversity, equity, and inclusion work in corporate America. And we talk a little bit about that in the book. We share some examples in terms of, like, how these power dynamics favor some more so than others. And we don't actually talk about my actual instance in the book. We talk about that on the blog in a 3-part series called A Resignation Story. But it's essentially, you know, a situation where I was made to feel very uncomfortable and was basically being, you know, I hate to sound dramatic, but when people, like what they say, attack your character. And that's something that happened to me. But there was a really interesting racial dynamic that was a part of that. And I learned a lot about myself through that process. I also learned that a lot of people have their own versions and stories of things like this.
Yeah.
And are still till this day very uncomfortable talking about it. And so we felt as leaders, but also as creatives, that it was our job to talk about those things. And I think it actually helps to justify why our book is so important. Because when we talk about managing your money, we can't talk about money without talking about work. And if we're talking to Black professionals, we have to acknowledge why their projections, why their sense of comfort should or discomfort needs to be factored into their career. And so when we talk about a 15-year career, it's not just a matter of saying, hey, so that you can make as much money, get in and get out. It's also a matter of saying, hey, these environments have historically been very harmful to not just your physical health, but our mental health. There is certainly blowback in terms of how it impacts the way that you show up as a parent, especially as a father. It's actually worse for men, given the failures of paternal leave policies and all of those other things. But it's not designed for families to thrive.
No. Right.
And so if you want to give your family much more than what typical corporate America benefit structures allow you to have, you need to plan and manage your career so that you can actually do that. And again, it's not even just so that you can have a better relationship with your children. Increasingly, more of us are also financially responsible for caring for our parents. And so if you want to be there for your parents, it's very difficult to do that if you are working a traditional job, because jobs don't really allow you to do that without burning your vacation time, your personal time, or just continually setting yourself up to be late. And so a lot of this, these other layers from diversity and benefits are sort of factored into our recommendation for the 15-year career. And that was at the heart of why I ultimately decided that it was time for me to move on, because I'd built streams of income outside of my job and I was empowered to do that.
Yeah.
I love that. And I appreciate that you tackled that dynamic about what it is to be Black and to work in corporate America, because that is a topic that you don't find in other financial books. And you've been pulled in the stories of other people. And I was reading one and I said, oh my goodness, the same thing happened to me, you know, but in reading that, in reading your book, it's affirmed, you know, my belief that I can still succeed and I can still have a great life in spite of what might, you know, be happening in corporate America, that I can still cash out and win the wealth game by one day walking away.
Yes. Yeah. That's exactly what we wanted. Like when we were writing, there were so many times where we'd like imagine a persona of a really smart person who does not need to be told what to do, but to be reminded of how powerful she is or he is and what choices they have in front of them. Because that's the key to liberation. That's the key to freedom, is to believe that you have a choice. And so many of us just don't think we have a choice. And it's like, but you do. Like, you just need to change a couple of things and then choose whenever you want to. It doesn't have to be year 15, or you don't have to retire at 40 or whatever it is. Like, but just to always feel like you have a choice, because that's how you maintain your power. And that's how you opt out of really toxic situations before they become harmful to your family.
Right. Absolutely. Yep. Well, y'all, I want to get a little spicy. All right? So let's talk about it, right? All right. So let's talk about navigating life after you leave the workforce, right? So with your spouse, I really want to get some insight from you two, because you two now work together.
Yeah.
And I was talking about this. She was like, because as we near retirement, you know, we had these conversations and she looked at me one day. She's like, man, do I want to be around you 24/7? Like, is that what I want? So how have you all navigated leaving the workforce and now being entrepreneurs together, or retiring together, or, you know, how does one navigate that life now? And is it hard?
Yeah. I mean, it's not easy. We're not perfect. We have our days. We have far more good days than bad days.
Yeah.
Writing a book together during a pandemic while raising a child and all the other things is not easy, but we were able to do it. I think we're a little unique in that we met at work, right? So when we met in 2012, you know, we met starting our jobs and working on the same teams. And so we were already kind of familiar with each other's work style and our approaches, and we knew that it was complementary. Even as we were exploring renovating our home, that in and of itself is, even as we were exploring our real estate portfolio back in the day before we ended up selling it, that was a partnership. That was us working together in order to make those things happen. And so I think, you know, we're life partners. That's really what this is about. We're husband and wife. We're already a team. And so for us, it wasn't that difficult being able to make that pivot. I will say there are much more, there are some simple things that help, right? Like, we've got three levels to the house. She works upstairs. I work downstairs, and there's a lot of room in between, so we can't necessarily hear each other. You know, I might hear when she's going to get some water or something, and, you know, on the main level. But like, you know, that helps. We didn't do that by design. It just so happened to be that.
Yeah, that worked out.
That worked for us. But you know, I think you know, we get through it, right? Yeah. You know, we don't get too much into that in the book.
Yeah.
But obviously there's a lot that comes with like working with your partner. Learning their work style, also giving them room to grow, and you know, like we're not each other's boss. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like we're collaborating on this. We got a whole other business that we're starting, and so it's fun overall. But there are definitely some challenges every now and then.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of like role models. There's not a lot of mm-hmm. you know couples that are out loud and like working together and sharing their tips. And so
yeah.
I don't even know that would help if that did exist. But it's a lot of trial and error. It's a lot of like asking, you know, I'm not telling you this as your coworker. I'm telling you this as your wife.
Yeah.
So respond as my husband and not my business coach or whatever hat you're wearing today. There's a lot of like weird kind of quirky stuff like that where I have to like introduce which role I'm playing before I right. say the thing. And then to Julian's point, there's a lot of just like creating space. Like we spend a lot of time together between raising a kid and running some businesses and family time. And so there's a lot of effort and intentionality in, you know, allowing each other to miss each other. So I'm going to go here for 2 days or you go there for 2 days or tonight we're going to eat dinner in separate rooms just like to let the day breathe because there's been a lot of togetherness. So again, it probably sounds odd to people who are not in the same situation, but it's what's allowed us to continue doing this. And it's what's allowed it to be sustainable because we create space.
Yeah. I love that, man. I mean, I think Chris Rock was saying how nowadays couples see so much of each other in comparison to his mother and father, like they wouldn't see each other like all day. You know, yeah. So,
I remember that.
It's true.
It's true.
It's true.
There's something to that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's great. That's great. I kind of wanted to go there because, you know, any individual who's reading this book and says, okay, at this year, I could be done, you know, it kind of wanted to get some insight on, well, what's life look like after that?
Yes.
Because I truly believe that, you know, there's going to be a lot of people cashing out, man, after this, after reading this book. I really believe that it's very enlightening and it opens you up to something that many people don't even really think of, like, man, okay, I could do this.
So, yeah.
I hope you're right.
Because that gets me excited about the progress we'll make as a community, right?
Yes.
If fewer people are spending 50 hours, 60 hours focusing on, you know, spreadsheets and whatever you do at work, like you can actually have better conversations and be better friends and start to ask better questions and check on your strong friend. And, you know, for the fellas, actually talk about your mental health together and move past the basic conversations of basketball and rap or whatever. That's very cliche. I know y'all talk about more than that.
That's a good assessment.
Sorry, fellas.
I'm gonna let it slide.
I just look forward to how we all can show up for each other when we're not so focused on being these brazen careerists with no end in mind.
Yeah absolutely. Well, Shia, any final thoughts?
Sure. You know, I was just going to say that we appreciate you both so much.
Man,
and everything you do, do it with a spirit of excellence,
right.
And we admire that about you, and we're super excited about your book and the things to come after.
Thank
you so much,
guys. Absolutely. So where can people find this book? Where can they get their hands on it? Let us know where this is going to be at.
Yeah, so pretty much every major retailer, so Amazon, you can get the book at Target, Walmart, Barnes and Nobles. Those tend to be the top four places where we found people are searching for books, but there's several others. You can go to our website at richandregular.com. We will have a list of, for those who are interested, Black-owned and indie bookstores if you want to support, you know, small businesses. So we'll have a list of those. We'll even have a list of libraries. There are a handful of them who are going to have the book ready for checkout. Obviously, not all of them, but you can do that as well. If you aren't able to purchase the book, you can certainly ask that your library request it. We'll also have audiobooks. We'll be narrating it ourselves. And so if you prefer to listen on Audible or on the Apple Books audiobook platform, you can do it there as well. But anywhere books are sold, you should be able to get it. And if not, you can ask them and they'll get it. But if not, Amazon is probably going to be your best bet.
Man, that's dope, y'all. We talk about Target and Amazon and Barnes and Noble. Like, come on. You know, this is for real. So we're super hyped for you both. So
thank you.
Thank y'all for being on, man.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, man, it's great seeing you guys. Yes. Only thing I'm missing is some udon noodles.
Ooh, right.
And some wings and some drinks. So we'll definitely have to do this again in person next time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, everybody. So we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Black Married and Debt Free podcast. This is Marcus, and I'm here with my lovely wife,
Shira.
We're going to holler at y'all on the next one. Peace.
Bye.